And a U.S. campaign against Iran has our allies nervous about another possible military action in the Middle East, and political analysts are advising caution. My guest this morning, Mark Gopin, says that the consequences of a military attack would be catastrophic and that there are other means for dealing with Iran's combativeness. Mark Gopin is the James H. Lowry Professor at George Mason University's Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution and Director of the Center for World Religions, Diplomacy, and Conflict Resolution. And he's co-author of the op-ed piece, How to Challenge Iran's Militancy Without Using Arms, which appeared in the Christian Science Monitor on August 23rd. Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
So the news hook this morning, I guess, is the head of the French government is saying he believes that a nuclear Iran would be a threat to the world.
Yes, and I think that this is a priority for many countries that are very nervous about this, both in the region and out of the region. And everyone's agreed that if this aggressive program continues unabated without some way to curb their ambitions, it is going to lead to a crisis in a matter of years.
So how close, what are the experts telling you, Mark, about how close Iran really is to having the bomb?
Well, this is always a guessing game. People underestimated how close the North Koreans were, but the North Korea is a far more closed society than Iran. I think most experts believe that it's really 5 to 7 years away, and therefore, a lot of the urgency of this is not because they're going to have it in the next 2 years, as much as the fact that there was a strong wish on the part of President Bush to do something about this before he left office.
To do something about it, what would that look like?
Well, there were persistent rumors that meant some sort of military action in the form of setting back their nuclear program. It goes back and forth in Washington on this. A lot of security experts and most people are telling me now that they don't believe that the administration thinks they have any kind of consensus, even among the most conservative thinkers, to take military action at this point. So, and the fact that they've taken these smart sanctions against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard would suggest that they're doing some sophisticated thinking about non-military approaches to pressuring Iran.
Okay, but this notion of demonizing the Revolutionary Guard, is that a good one in your view?
Well, I think that most people feel that the most destructive influence, the most violent, or the most aggressive element of the Iranian leadership is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and they're the most corrupt, and they're the ones that are funding most of the support for extremist groups in the Middle East. And they are the question of who's in power and who's in total control in Iran is a very complicated one, but people are quite worried that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard are the most in control of the nuclear program.
So the head of the state, is he popular with the Iranian people? I've read that he's only popular when the Iranian people fear that we're going to invade.
Well, he's popular when he, like any leader, if he satisfies domestic concerns, he becomes popular. The only time he can become popular on foreign policy issues is if the Iranian people feel that they're under attack. So he has disappointed a number of constituencies in the population because he promised better prices, he promised things to the poor and to the domestic urban population that was so displaced. The urban population, the poor urban population, has always been the major source of discontent in Iran ever since the radical modernization efforts of the Shah. He came in and promised lower prices, and he didn't get it. On the contrary, now they're getting rationing, and there are strikes and such. So he's not in as good shape as he was a few years ago. On the other hand, his radical vision has the support of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, And then there are the clerics, and the clerics can only really come out against him when he really screws up in terms of the international community. If he puts Iran in a particularly bad position, then they can stand up and challenge him.
I've heard that the middle class in Iran, by and large, likes us folks in the West, that they like our culture, they like the music, that they're not anti-Western.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I cited statistics that 70% of the country is not middle class, but 70% thought that normal relations with the West should be a high priority. That's from an important centrist group of policymakers and former policymakers called Terror Free Tomorrow, and they 70% want normal relations. That's much more than the middle class. The middle class, for certain, is very pro-American. In fact, they listen to our radio stations, and they're just very very fed up with the government. But that's it goes wider than that. There really isn't, you know, when you think about whether you could get a 70% desire for normal relations with the West from Saudi Arabia, I mean, by contrast, you wouldn't stand a chance. So this is a very complex country where we have actually a lot of allies if we were to approach them with a lot more subtlety.
Did the poll ask how they felt about getting the nuclear bomb? How did the public feel about that? Was that a high priority?
Well, the poll said that 29% of Iranians thought nuclear energy was a high priority. That's 33 out of every 10. But like I said, 7 out of 10 thought normal relations with the West should be a high priority. So it's like the bomb is something that the same thing happened in Pakistan and in India and in Israel. When people have the opportunity to acquire nuclear energy and a bomb, it's a prize that people want in terms of ultimate safety and defense. Of course, it's not that. You know, as soon as you have a bomb, somebody else could have a bomb who will immediately start developing it against you, which is what's going to happen in the Gulf. Or worse, the Western states won't even allow them to build it. So it looks like it's something that's that is an object of pride and safety, and it's only natural that 3 out of 10 would consider it a high priority. But that's a pretty low number. Again, in Pakistan, the number who would support having nuclear weapons is far higher. This is actually, ironically, a moderate country beneath the surface of their leadership.
It's 10 minutes before 10 o'clock. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Midday Utah on KPCW Park City, KCPW Salt Lake City. And I'm talking with Mark Gopin, the James Lowry Professor of George Mason University's Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution and Director of the Center for World Religions, Diplomacy, and Conflict Resolution. So what are your recommendations? What ought this administration to do at this point? But we've heard that Dick Cheney's just itching to send the fighters, the bombers, in there.
Right, and what I'm worried about is also that if they can't directly just have an unprovoked attack, that they may be ratcheting up the pressure to make the Iranian Revolutionary Guard lash out, and then they will have a casus belli. They'll have a reason to attack. If, for example, they fire off a missile in the direction of one of our ships in the off the coast of Iran. I mean, this is how things escalate. It's how the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, happened. And I'm worried that he's trying to provoke that kind of interaction. I think it's a terrible mistake because there are alternatives here. The smart sanctions should be given time to work, which means, and I approve of them, namely, the shifting of sanctions towards only those people who are directly implicated in the extremism of the government and their assets. I think that is proven to have had impact in other places. I think it's having a strong impact on Hamas, for example, even though in this case Hamas managed to supplant their support with support from Iran and from Qatar, which I wrote about in another article. But I think the smart sanctions should be given time to work. And then secondly, I think there should be a strong effort to create negotiations at a high level. There is nothing wrong with sanctioning and negotiating and talking at the same time, which is something that the administration has never done, but that many other administrations always did. And secondly, and finally, so this three things, smart sanctions, negotiating while pressuring, and the third thing should be a broad effort at cultural relations, which means aggressive invitations to Iranians to come here and for Americans to go there if they will be allowed to, and to further pressure the government and saying that the American people welcomes you and what you're doing with the nuclear program is foolish. The fourth thing that they can do is find ways, and this is not easy, but find ways, and I say this in the article, to support businesses that are not owned by the government and to make it particularly easy for Iranians to do business in the West and to demonstrate by that a gesture of goodwill to the people of Iran. Now, it's possible, it's quite likely, that the Iranian government would find a way to prevent that last option or to punish people. But then that would be on their heads, you see. If there were opportunities, business opportunities, and the Iranian government clamps down on that, then that's going to make the Iranian government even further even more unpopular. And that's the goal in the art of war, in Sun Tzu's art of war. You always want to weaken and confuse the adversary by dividing. And you can divide the people of Iran easily from the government with a clever strategy.
The administration, though, seems to be trying to paint a picture at this point of the Revolutionary Guard being the next best thing to al-Qaeda. Is there a link there?
Well, the Revolutionary Guard is definitely one of the more destructive elements in Iran's foreign policy and their relationship to Hezbollah and to Hamas. And they definitely have been responsible in the past for many violent things. And there are things to worry about in terms of the sophistication of their aggressive programs. Hezbollah's military tactics, which they're now transferring to Hamas, are a very worrisome development in the Middle East, and it can all be traced, to the influence of the Revolutionary Guard. In addition, there's very passionate feelings inside the Beltway in Washington and the Pentagon about Iranian help through the Revolutionary Guard to people who are killing American soldiers in Iraq. And, one of the reasons why war gets out of hand is because when your soldiers are dying, people get very, very intense about it, and I don't blame them. But the best way to undermine the Revolutionary Guard's influence in Iran is to lure the Iranian people away from them. And it wouldn't be that hard to do because most people feel quite crushed by this corrupt group that has so militarized their country.
I believe I read in an article by Paul Krugman recently, he said, the United States did absolutely the best thing for Iran that it could have done in terms of making it a new power in the Middle East by wiping out the dictatorship in Afghanistan, the Taliban, and then taking out Saddam Hussein. Because up until that point, Iran was kind of in a box. Now they're not.
Well, Paul is right about that. And a lot of analysts feel that they were unintended consequences of taking out Saddam's regime was that it ignored the geopolitical consequences of the counterweight that Saddam's regime was to Iran, to Iranian power and influence. And it also underestimated the level of anxiety that this would cause for the Gulf states, which are Sunni and relatively defenseless. So there's an old standing rivalry here and balance of power of Shiite and Sunni, and that is buttressed by the old powers of this Persian country and Persian Empire. This is a very, very sophisticated, ambitious country, and there are old histories here of empire that go even deeper than the question of the Shiite-Sunni relations. So when you take the old Babylonian Empire, which is the Iraq, and you decimate it, you just basically pulverize it and make it into pieces, then the Persian power immediately increases. And then you have the tragedy or the problematic that despite everybody's naive notions of creating a democracy overnight, you have a Shiite majority in Iraq that now has no interest in allowing this Sunni minority to have a real stake in the future, not after everything that they did all those years under Saddam. And if there is a Shiite majority, they're going to have a natural ally in Iran. And so it has shifted everything in Iran's favor. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
So if we pull out then, leaving some kind of a power vacuum, is it Iran that's likely to rush in to fill that vacuum?
Yeah, yes, they will rush in, and they're the most capable of doing so, in the sense that it's just a very powerful country with a very sophisticated indigenous form, even of making their own weapons and such that the Saudis, for example, can't hold a candle to. The Saudis are threatened that they will rush in. Well, they'll rush in with radical fighters who are ready to commit suicide, and that'll be an endless sort of bloodletting. But in terms of the sophistication of investments and development of infrastructure, it's Iran that's going to be able to be the most successful in building the infrastructure of Iraqi society.
The op-ed piece is How to Challenge Iran's Militancy Without Using Arms. It appeared in the Christian Science Monitor on August 23rd. The author is Mark Gopin. Mark, where do we go in cyberspace to find the article?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I think certainly on the Christian Science Monitor website. But more simply, if you want to just do Google News, and spell my name, Mark Gopin, MarcGopin. You'll see the article right there.
All right, Mark. Appreciate your time.
Okay, great.